Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Making Up Time by Adele Gardner, with music by Patrick Earn, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Captain, we've overshot the mark, I sang out with glee. Great job, Sonia, precise as always. Chipper Captain Ruiz, always keeping the praise flowing. One of the many reasons I liked her. We watched the clock together. Well, pretty much everyone did. It was still neat to see those hands flying backwards, blurring past the speed of thought. The only way they could be stopped now was via the automatic timer, which had to be programmed before we engaged the drive. Otherwise, the slingshot effect would catapult us backwards into the beginning of time. Happy chatter filled the comms. We all liked to stay connected at moments like this. Close by my side, Perry muttered, "You forgot to add in the brake factor." Talk about your sudden gravity wells. My heart shot past my feet. No, I did that at the start. It doesn't go at the start, she hissed. I liked that. I'd take all the blame, while she'd been the one distracting me. The things she whispered in my ear. I heard that, Captain Ruiz said ominously. I can fix it, Captain. I could, if Perry would only return to her station and let me think. Captain Ruiz looked around the command center, her black hair gleaming in the telltales like the starry night. Under her scrutiny, each teammate straightened and glanced back uneasily. Does anyone want Sonia to fix it? They looked at each other, at me. They looked at their hands. Perry bit the bullet. I'll do it, Captain. Did I say I wanted it done? But we'll get there too soon, Yasmin objected. This was the dilemma, the catch. The very reason we were forced, by our own galactic laws, to set the timer first. We had to use the slingshot effect, not just to break from FTL, but to get back to the relative time we'd left. We'll never get home if we have to make up that much time, not to mention... Perry dropped her voice, her light touch on my back making me shiver. It's going to get us all flung forward to doomsday if they catch us. The slingshot effect. First conceived as a way to use planetary mass to propel humans farther and faster into deep space, it had become our time saver, our miracle cure. The only way families could stay in sync in the space age without being separated by centuries due to relativity. But this error of mine risked both our professional and literal futures, if they caught us. Yasmin moaned beside me. Papa's 89. He's all I've got. You can't overshoot the mark. Sonia. I can't afford to go in too early. He'll never recognize me. And I don't dare cross my own path. You're not a black cat, Yasmin, I said. And I'll never be, if I don't straighten this out. Too far in the past, and I'll never get the chance for that upgrade. I practiced my best meow while my fingers flew. Beside me, Perry plugged in her Sonata solution and called for the shipboard cats to come and help. With their finely attuned sense of the right moment, their greater range of natural senses, and the fluid way they navigated time, cats were essential and valued members of the crew. Yes, Perry cried. She had found the moment. She reached for the lever. Captain Ruiz slapped Perry's hands away from the controls. Don't touch that dial. But Captain... Sonia, how far are we off the time curve? Close enough to hop on again, but we've got maybe 15 seconds? I crouched next to the console, pretending to work on the diodes, but ready to block our captain if she made another move on Perry, who glared daggers at me for daring to interfere. Captain Ruiz looked around at us, her gaze clear and keen. "Don't you want to right the greatest wrongs in human history? Stop the worst crimes against humanity and nature?" I knew what she meant. I also knew how time management would view her good intentions. Like any powerful technology, making up time had to be regulated and agreed to across all colonies and time zones in order to keep anyone from gaining an unfair advantage. In this case, the stakes weren't just world domination, but all of human history. So the Accords demanded that each ship stay in its time lane, and the ship's central clock was sacrosanct, even above life support. The great danger, of course, was that some fool would get greedy and go back too far, on purpose. Because even a noble, humanitarian goal of saving people from persecution, war, or disaster risked destroying the circumstances that put us in space in the first place. No one wanted to be the first to break the interstellar law of time management. To go too far? That violation was viewed as worse than mass murder. But Captain Ruiz didn't look like I'd just wiped out humanity. She grinned at me. Slowly, she held up her wrist. She tapped the teeny golden box we'd given her for her last birthday. The mini space chronometer, a classic. "It never goes out of style," I said nervously. "It's the Harrison Maker's Mark." She named the company that stretched all the way back to seafaring days, when the invention of an accurate marine chronometer had finally allowed people to navigate the seas, across what they considered almost inconceivable distances. "We all chipped in, Captain," Perry said. It had been our present of appreciation for the woman who kept us alive through 25 incredible missions. Many ships never made it past 15 before the frazzled crew and battered ship gave up and settled on a planet. "Calibrated to keep accurate time despite acceleration or gravity shifts. It can mark a precise location in space-time, just as the originals solved the problem of longitude calculations at sea." Her violet eyes twinkled. "I'm lost, Captain," I confessed. "But I'm not, and will never be." Excited whispers flowed through command like the whoosh of the recert kicking in. Oh, my heart, I loved that woman. Her fingers zinged data to each of our stations. We got busy. "If we can't go home again, we may as well do some good," I hazarded as we watched our tether to our native time slip past the port window. "Goodbye, Papa," Yasmin said sadly. We chorused with the names of our loved ones and murmured our favorite blessings. Softly, I started singing our ship's song. Around me, reverent murmurs chimed in. "We'll arrive just in time to save you." There were a lot of wrongs that needed fixing on Earth. To punish us, they had to get there first. And we'd beat them every time. Cortellian Rain by Jonathan Nevers, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Nothing stings like Cortellian Rain. Sharko Azulo lifted the negative-charged rain shield higher over his head. Shock droplets crackled electric, sparkling like fireflies on impact. Pellets sizzled on the tarmac at his feet, the voltage-bearing precipitation illuminating the landing pad atop Gendaro Tower, Giran City's second-highest building, with a shower of icy blue that glitched the night. Sharko didn't mind. At 112, middle-aged for a blood-bound human, he'd numbed to its endless recitation years ago. so had generations of citizens on the tiny planet of Empire's heart. The rain started falling after the pulse, 6,000 years ago. It never stopped. From Giran City to its endless sprawling submetropolises, the electrified precipitation reminded citizens of the burden of dominion. Atop his high vantage point on Jindaro Tower, the rain yielded nothing more than a pleasing and unpredictable aesthetic to the endless and precise urban nightscape displayed before him. Soaring skyscrapers ran like synthetic, ordered mountains in a variety of geometric guises. Slender needles rose high and thin as if pulled and stretched while soft and malleable. Strict and lean rectangles, given structural integrity by internal beams running deep underground, stood like trees of a petrified steel forest. Most impressive were the vertical double helixes rotating with steady precision, adding much-needed dynamism and curvilinear relief to the city's visual gestalt. In all directions, Giran ran in calculated metallic majesty, and yet it left something to be desired. Didn't all great cities there for the taking? Sharko surveyed the vast domain comprised of premier human engineering. As Este, head of the Cortellian Artists Guild responsible for social and urban design, his mind's visionary capabilities lay manifest before him. Its thrill had been a career satisfied, the pinnacle of professional achievement. But within known bounds. "Not anymore," he said, the sinister words barely audible over the crackling droplets. The ultimate tool had been liberated. In secret, with the aid of his rogue Jerak associate, he'd broken through a barrier as profound as his forerunners who usurped the limitations of light-speed travel. With the innovative capability he now possessed, how far might he see and go? A tingle caressed his skin in the wet night. The teeny hairs on the back of his neck rose and a shiver ran through him. It was watching. The unseen shadow of the tower's gaze fell onto his back. Sharko shook his head and shoulders to reposition his blazer and repel the chilling presence. No use. As if to remind him it offered a higher perch, the watcher lingered. An eyeless, alien panopticon, the black monolithic needle loomed large. Perhaps it was an antenna to the God Gate, as many on Empire's Heart believed. Or, as the skeptics in the Philosophy Guild touted, it might be a psychological jest left by the overlords after the pulse. An illusionistic trick gifted to generate self-regulation, exploiting mental insecurity and guilt that bubbled up from the unconscious. Did the gods predict the dubious operations catering to greed, profit, and personal gain by the bloodbounds running the Empire? Sharko dared not turn around. His confidence was fragile enough. He might have control over the social and architectural anatomy of the planet, but not the tower. It stood as the sole exception in the Cortellian Empire. He, along with everyone living and dead since the pulse, had never had the privilege of its view over Giran. The ominous needle remained as inaccessible as answers to the questions of why and how the known galactic universe had been wiped clean to start anew. It had been an outlier, a mysterious anomaly, an anachronistic intruder that emerged fully formed like a spike slammed into planetary stone with the stroke of a god's hammer.
"Our guests are late, Este."
Borelli, the Jerak cyborg, approached and stood next to him. Sharko nodded, keeping his eyes on the spiraling underside of the storm clouds illuminated by the colorful lights of the city. Reds as rich as ruby emeralds crossed with icy blues, producing passing swatches of deep purple on the undulating and rolling cloud blanket. Greens the color of algae blooms in the city's underground growing lanes clipped the edges of slow-running, intense orange patches cast from Garand's trademark icons lighting the central district. Charco thought it like a darkened pillow viewed through a kaleidoscope. And yet far too small for the gods that sleep beyond the gate.
The escorts should be here by now,
Varelli said, more volume to her voice. The drizzle had increased to steady rain. Charco noted how it forced the Jerax words to compete with the symphony of percussive fireworks falling around them. Does this concern you? He turned, careful to ensure the rain stayed wide of his suit's conductive materials. A few strikes to anything but his rubberized black boots might be a nuisance, but a steady hard rain, unshielded, could prove deadly.
Not a good sign,
she said.
Especially in our case.
Charco glanced at the night sky. Varelli was right. The longer it took the ship to break the storm clouds, the worse things looked for him. Had the gatekeepers decided to pass on his offer? The key unlocking unprecedented political power need only be set into the lock at the boundary under their control, and extra-dimensional consciousness would be his to exploit. No longer would he yield to anyone, anywhere. Not just in Garan, or on Empire's Heart, but in the entire known expanse of Cortellian space. Charco Azulo would tower over a galactic empire. Yet, the gatekeeper's ship was nowhere to be seen. Inviting non-terrestrials onto Empire's Heart was an unorthodox request, but securing a clandestine entry tract without appropriate sanctions felt like career suicide, even for someone as high-ranking as a guild leader. Potentially, it could cost him his life. So pumped the heart of the Empire. It tightened its grip around even the most powerful arteries in its service flow when needed, redirecting political bloodlust through alternative valves to survive and rebuild even the deepest treacheries. And this one will run deep. Charco's fingers tightened their grip on the rain shield's handle.
I don't like lateness,
Varelli said, shaking her bald head. Against the long black overcoat with its high, angular neck visor, her bare-bone white skin stood out in high contrast. Of course you don't, Charco said. What Jerax does. She tilted her head in recognition, raising the skin where a human possessed an eyebrow. Flickering blue lights from the shock droplets hitting her rain shield danced in reflections off her shaven crown. Charco walked to the railing lining the tarmac, thoughts of failure rising and threatening his veneer of confidence. A few rogue pellets contacted his boots as he strode to the ledge. Charged impacts crackled and snapped, sending harmless vibrations reverberating through his feet. Cortellian rain, how we endure you to hold on to an empire. He leaned over the railing and dropped his gaze to the vista below. Lanes of air traffic navigated through the open space grids between skyscrapers 2,000 feet underneath the high perch. His eyes tracked a single drop of glowing blue, following it as it passed and plunged into the depths. Spiraling colors lighted from the advertisements shot across the droplet, shifting its hue on the descent. He lost sight of it before it reached the dense traffic of air taxis, city shuttles, and private crafts that clogged the avenues. From this height, calm and orderly illusion veiled the reality of frenzied activity and noise in the transportation lanes.
The rain falls heavy tonight,
Varelli said, appearing next to him.
Perhaps it is the cause of the delay.
Charco stared at the barrage of droplets plummeting and filling the empty spaces between buildings with flickering blue streams of light. Why do we endure it? An entire galactic civilization answered to a small, rebuilt world because of events thousands of years earlier that remained inexplicable. It cast a powerful illusion, like a play running far too long for an audience that had become complacent. intergalactic rule could just as easily be given to another planetary or space-based nation and governed with equal success. Sharko knew the script and its players as well as any other citizen on the teeny world rotating near the galactic core. A tale spun from history had been woven into a truth long sustained. The Empire's heart was chosen. "Do you believe, Varelli?" Sharko turned to the Garak.
"Sir?"
"The rain. I've never asked you." He faced the cyborg. Her red eyes, consumed with the potent color of blood, shut and opened with mechanical precision. "Are you a believer?" he asked.
"I do not answer such questions,"
she said, and gazed down at the urban depths. "Of course you don't," he scoffed. Mechano-humans didn't carry the same burdens of philosophical sufferings as the blood-bound. "It's not in your nature to do so."
"Correction,"
she said.
"It was trained out of my nature. Jeraks do not consider hypotheticals as potential certainties. It is a contradiction that leads to indeterminate outcomes."
Sharko laughed and turned back to the rain falling on the city. A carefully positioned non-position.
"An elegant solution,"
she said.
"As rewarding as finding the weakness in an opponent through intuition rather than analysis."
A terrifying statement. Sharko felt the intellectual superiority of the Jeraks and all their kind wash over him. A reminder that while bloodbounds held the Empire in their grip politically, they were no masters of consciousness nor the rulers of knowledge in Cortellian space. Without the Jeraks and the gatekeepers, the Empire lost two of its three legs. The tripod dais of rulership collapsed without the superiority of others. How fitting, power wielded in subservience. Like the rain. Not for long. As soon as the key fit in the lock, he would wield enough power to share a prudent portion with the gatekeepers and turn his back on the Jeraks and his fellow blood-bound humans. Only Varelli, being wise enough to abandon the strict dogma of her fellow cyborgs, would be spared.
"And you, as a bloodbound?"
Varelli asked. She traced a circle in the puddle at her feet with her boot, the pointed tip as sleek and sharpened as her intelligence.
"Does your faith fall in line with public pronouncements?"
It was a bold question, bordering on a breach of social custom between two species. But he'd initiated the discourse and she'd snaked through the small, allowable rhetorical opening. Typical Jerak. Always finding a way to slip inside even the slightest crack with deadly precision. "I stand by the Council's position in public," Sharko said. He ran a hand through his hair. "Privately, I find the question untenable. The rain is here, so I relieve myself of the burden of weighing its purpose to the Empire." It wasn't a lie. Scientific explanation pointed to ionized air colliding with positively charged water molecules, a leftover of the pulse. But myth usurps reason across the expanse of Cortellian space. From the galactic core, with its political network of star systems vying endlessly for influence in the courts, to the backwater nether reaches of the outer spirals, allure and mysticism held sway over an empire. Was that why he was leaving and taking a most precious weapon with him? Sharko closed his eyes and gave himself over to the crackling of rain impacting the tarmac. Did its electrostatic chorus defy scientific reason? A seductive spell, cast like grains of sand from an extra-dimensional god's hand, had crossed the Empire, pleasing the ears of billions, convincing a galactic civilization of power reborn, given liberty to flourish by an unknown, watching force. But for how long? An eternity, it was said. or at least until the gods returned in grace. The pulse that wiped the planet of its past had come and gone 6,000 years ago, a blip in cosmic time. But for the bloodbounds whose lifespans were roughly 200 years, it felt like truth passing into myth.
Flight lights,
Forelli said, breaking his rumination and relieving him of the need to answer her question. Sharko spun to face the landing pad. He held his rain shield higher to gain a clear view of the storm clouds. A ship, illuminated by sparkling raindrops impacting its hull, descended from the colored reflections in the cloud cover.
I sense expansion,
Forelli said.
As if there were a... That's not our escort.
Sharko stared, transfixed.
The gate is open,
the cyborg said. A gleaming silver ship, rippling in waves of immateriality, reached the tarmac and hovered as it aligned itself with the central landing lights. He and Varelli moved further away to avoid the spray of rain blowing from the reverse burners. Like a predatory, interdimensional insect, the ship's wings collapsed inward over its back. A set of landing legs butterflied open. With a thud, the craft dropped onto the landing pad and acquiesced to three-dimensional space and time. The seal on the craft's ramp broke with an audible hiss. Air shifted on the tarmac, an unseen current palpable and rising. Invisible energy rushed through him. Sharko's flesh and blood quivered. Through the mist, an indistinct humanoid descended and stood unprotected from the rain. The falling pellets vanished around its blue aura. It can't be, he whispered. Forelli dropped to one knee. Sparks flew off her thigh as rain contacted her limb, extending beyond the range of the rain shield. The Jerak held the pain inside in silent and devout reverence. Sharko stumbled back as a second wave hit, nearly losing his grip on the rain shield. Information flooded his neural highways. Answers to questions debated for thousands of years swirled inside his mind. Forelli glanced up at him from her pious position. The Jerak's expression made clear that the thought answers also filled her mind. Explications bombarded him like epistemological artillery firing back and forth on an internal mental battlefield. His neurons turned to fireworks. I can't. Sharko swayed. He gritted his teeth and fought the impending overload. Forelli knelt still, eyes wide, nodding frantically and accepting data at rapid-fire rates of comprehension. The incoming stream of information swirling through his neurons reached a fevered pitch. In the corner of his blurred vision, Forelli's bald head shook and rattled. Please! He screamed internally, struggling with each word. I can't! As if in pathetic apology, the unknown visitor slowed the neural sequence. The volleys inside his mind were cast aside like leaves blown away by the wind. Sharko exhaled and loosened his sweaty grip on the rain shield's handle. He closed his eyes and fought back rising nausea. Calm and control returned to his internal comprehensive mechanics. The mental light of a single message remained, radiating vibrant. As it grew legible, his newfound comfort transformed into sublime joy. An answer to the most pressing questions for all who had lived on Empire's heart since the pulse stood revealed.
Sharko.
Forelli's voice came from below where she kneeled, clear and crisp, and yet only a whisper.
The key unlocked the gate.
He opened his eyes. An uncanny stillness permeated the tarmac as if God's hand had squeezed the flow of cosmic time in its grip. Geran lay silently around him. Eternity's end, he whispered, looking around the landing pad, The visitor was nowhere to be seen. On instinct, he turned and faced the tower. Near its zenith, a diamond-shaped window shone brightly. A faint silhouette of a figure stood, backlit, casting a blue glow. Charco dropped his rain shield on the tarmac. The rain had stopped. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Making Up Time by Adele Gardner, with music by Patrick Earn, and Portellian Rain by Jonathan Nevaire, with music by Fog Machine. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree or at spacecowboybooks.com. And don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And get a hold of us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.